In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I kick Mike off the show, I fly solo, and I'm answering a bunch of listener questions, covering topics ranging from monetizing SaaS using ads to whether a WordPress plugin company should consider launching a SaaS, as well as how to deal with the struggles of launching a two-sided marketplace. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 383. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob, and Mike has no power for the past day or two. So he has no internet, and I think a storm came through and knocked out a bunch of power, and he won't have it back, he said, at the earliest till midnight tonight. And I jump into a car with my son, my 11-year-old, and we are heading to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin for GaryCon in about 2 hours. So there was no overlap. Mike emailed me and let me know he wasn't able to make it. And so my goal was to find a guest this morning, and I emailed three or four people short notice, and no one was able to show up. So here I am. We ship every week, every Tuesday morning, an episode comes out. And so I dug into our listener question bag, and you know, we were down to one listener question last week. We're up to eight or nine this week, which is great. I enjoy these episodes when we answer listener questions. We've been doing them a lot more lately, and what I've noticed is the show, it feels like, you know, there's a lot more listener participation, and it also feels like we're keeping up with topics that are not just coming out of our heads. You know, these are really questions and topics that you, the listener, are thinking about. And so it feels like I enjoy these episodes because I feel like they're as relevant as we can be to the moment of what, you know, what you're thinking about and what you're launching as a listener base. So we are here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made, and also to weigh in on questions that you have as you're growing, building, launching your startup. So let's dive into our first question. It's from Dylan D, and it's about whether he can use advertising as a SaaS revenue model. He says, my company is Dunwich Technologies. It's a healthcare-focused consultancy, but we're developing a SaaS app to help patients better understand their confusing medical bills. I see the value in one-off uses. Doesn't feel like an app that could garner much daily activity or many daily active users. It's more like an every-so-often use. This, coupled with not wanting to charge for the app, leaves me with a few revenue options. Would medical/pharma ads on this app be the only or the best way to monetize it, in your opinion? And so my opinion is this will not work at all, because if you don't have a lot of daily actives, then ad-based revenue models are going to bring in pennies for you. I would be shocked, you know, if you have people logging in once a month or once every other month, even if you had, let's say you had 100,000 people using the app and they only log in once a month, you're going to make hundreds of dollars. Like, it is catastrophically low. The ad rates are just very low these days. You know, you look at a company like Facebook or Twitter or Google, and the only reason that ads work for them is because they have so many people constantly using the app. So, you know, if you're going direct to consumer and you don't think you can charge for it or don't want to charge for it, I would think of this as more of a lead gen thing, right? It's like, can it generate leads? Can you build up a big free customer base and generate leads for your consultancy? Or can it generate leads for another SaaS app that you may want to charge for? Or, you know, a video course, or, you know, I'm just throwing things out. Obviously, you may not want to create a video course, but you get the idea. If you're going to build something that truly is, you know, kind of a, I would say it's freemium, but there is no meum to it, right? There's no premium aspect because you're not going to upsell. But that is another thing you could think about, is to launch this, see what happens, see if there's any uptick. And yeah, you know, if you get 10,000 free users and they're asking for more things, you could then consider going freemium, right? And having a paid tier on top of this, even if it does just is a $5 or a $10 a month thing. It's really hard to do B2C SaaS. It's not done very often. If you look at even like Dropbox, they are trying to pivot into the enterprise because that's where the more money is and the lower churn and all this stuff. And Box.net kind of beat them to the punch on that. And, you know, I think that Dropbox was conceived as a B2C company, but if they want to maximize their valuation, frankly, they want to get in the enterprise because enterprise customers have higher lifetime values. And, you know, if you look at the stock market in the public or even the private markets, companies serving mid-market and enterprise and even SMBs are valued higher than, you know, the same amount of revenue serving consumers, because that revenue tends to be more volatile. So all that to say, I don't think you have any chance of making any money that's going to move the needle using an advertising model. So I would say if you're going to build it and you really want to, just give the thing away, see what happens, see if it becomes lead gen, see if, you know, and if nobody uses it, then that's fine too, right? It's like at least you took your shot. Our next question is an audio question. It's about a WordPress plugin company and whether they should offer a SaaS offering.
Hey, Rob and Mike, love this show. My name is Kyle. Thanks for taking my question. I work for a small WordPress plugin company. We're pretty well established and doing just fine, but looking to grow and take on some new kind of exciting projects. And I had some ideas that I wanted to get your input on. Basically, I want to see if introducing a small SaaS offering might make sense for our business. So obviously we distribute our WordPress plugins. That's our business right now. And our customers are mostly in e-commerce. But I was in the interest of helping our customers succeed and solve real problems that they have, and also becoming as indispensable to them as we can be, while at the same time introducing new streams of revenue for our business. I was wondering if maybe we should consider adding a SaaS offering, which we make available only initially to our existing users. Not something that we market to a broad audience, but something that we just silently roll out to users of our plugins already. I'm thinking this could be something very simple, some tool like helping them with their email delivery or file storage, data backups, staging environments, remote site management, reporting, business insights, something like that. I don't know. We could make a simple tool, put it in front of existing users, and say, kind of click here to take advantage of this extra monthly tool. So my questions are, how do you feel about the idea of creating some simple, light, MVP, simple SaaS product, initially making it only available to current users of our plugins? And do you have any opinions about the type of SaaS product which would be best for us to choose? If so, preferring something simple yet still useful to our customers, we're mostly running e-commerce sites. Thanks so much, and I look forward to meeting both of you this year at MicroConf. Thanks.
This is a great question. I think a lot of WordPress plugin vendors probably think about this because the appeal of having monthly recurring revenue versus the potential spikiness of a WordPress plugin and the one-time sales, it's appealing, you know, and SaaS and subscription revenue kind of is the golden ticket that everyone is looking for. Now, I would say that just to start with, I think this is a great idea. So I'm all for it. And I think if you want to dip your toe into it, you should definitely do it. I would say that when I talk to folks who do WordPress or do one-time sales, they're always talking about launching a SaaS. When I talk to people who have SaaS apps, so many of them are jealous of these one-time sale products because those product price points tend to be higher. And so, you know, you might sell a WordPress plugin for $40 to $200 and you get that nice pop right off the bat, right? If you sell one customer, you make $200 that month. Whereas if you have a lightweight SaaS, you might make $10 that month from the customer, and you got to keep them around and you're constantly working to do that and retain them. I know that with, you know, .NET Invoice, which was invoicing software I owned years ago, it was $300 for the product for a developer to buy it and use it. And we, you know, we only sold, eight to 15 copies a month. And, you know, you think about that and you think about, let's just say 10, you think about making 10 new SaaS signups that stick around and become customers. And that is catastrophic unless you're very, very expensive, right? Selling to the enterprise, but just a normal, let's say you're $20, $30, $40 a month. That's just, it's slow growth. It's going to be agonizing. Whereas if we sold 10 of .NET Invoice, it was $3,000 a month. And at the time I was looking to kind of make a car payment or make a house payment, you know, and I was doing consulting, and this was just a little side project that I didn't spend a ton of time on. And so that dollar amount and getting all the lifetime value up front from your customers, there is some appeal to that. So I would say don't look that gift horse in the mouth. You know, do realize that the couple beauties of WordPress are that you can, you know, you do get all the lifetime value up front, and that you have that built-in distribution channel of the WordPress repo. And that also ranks high in Google, which then, you know, can bring people to your WordPress page and get that free download. So with all that said, when I talk to a lot of WordPress folks who are, you know, have plugins and are making some money, they are always thinking of how to get into SaaS. And I don't think that's a bad thing because I think it's great. SaaS is more complicated. So it kind of levels you up. There's more to learn. It is that recurring revenue that you're looking for. So number one, I think, yes, you should give this a shot. Number two, I think you have an advantage because you already have paying customers. So, you know, I don't know, I have no idea about this business. If you have, you know, 1,000 people who've purchased it, or if you have 10,000, but that is a great built-in audience right there to start a SaaS from. I've talked on the podcast and at MicroConf Europe a couple years ago about what I believe are the only four true competitive advantages in SaaS. And it's who you know, so it's your network, it's who knows you, so it's your audience, and that includes customers, and it's being early to a space, and being a growth hacker, someone who knows how to think through it methodically and really grow anything. And so this is a case where you already have an existing audience of customers, and so you do have an advantage over someone starting from scratch. And you have customers who probably trust you and like you. So if you build something, you know, with them in mind, you should be able to have a pretty good start to your business. In addition, you probably have a bunch of free users, and I know they won't convert as well, but that should be, you know, a number that's 10 or even 100 times the number of people who've actually paid you. And so you do have some reach there. So that's the plus side. The negative side is building a SaaS is going to take a lot more time than building a WordPress plugin in general. And there's so much more, you know, there's the hosting and the infrastructure and uptime and all this stuff that you don't have to deal with. So it is going to be a big learning experience. So don't, you know, I wouldn't want you to think just because, you know, you've built software and you've built products and you've sold it, you definitely have learned a lot, but SaaS is going to be kind of that next level up in terms of complexity. So in my opinion, if I were you, especially in the e-commerce space, I would start talking to my customers. You already have them. You can have a few ideas. And I think in a perfect world, you might have 3 or 4 ideas that you start running by customers and saying, which one of these would you absolutely, no doubt, sign up for tomorrow? And take that short list and run it by, you know, I'm sure you know a bunch personally, and then start emailing 100 of your customers at a time, even if you don't know them, you know, and just being like, hey, we're considering branching into this. Would you buy it? And I think you're going to get pretty good feedback from that pretty quickly. So that's how I would approach it. I think, you know, asking my opinion, you've asked my opinion about what kind of app you should build. I have no idea because I don't know your customer base or what you're currently serving. When you look at, you know, I think that this, the best WordPress to SaaS kind of progressions are things like Optin Monster, where it was just a WordPress plugin, and then they just launched basically the same thing as a SaaS app. And so it was subscription. They already had the feature set they knew that was killer. They had experience in it. And so they literally kind of just turned a WordPress plugin into a recurring subscription. So if you're not on WordPress, you can still use it, but you pay the monthly. Craig Hewitt is doing this with his WordPress plugin, Seriously Simple Hosting, and then it's Castos now. But, you know, moving from this WordPress space and just kind of building a SaaS out of it. And I think that's a good way to go because you already have experience with that. You already have inbound interest. You have folks finding you through the WordPress repo. So you do have that traffic source and distribution channel. So again, I think if you want to get in this, you know, and get into the recurring game, I think it's a good idea. And I do think you have some advantages given your current business. So thanks for the question. My next question is from Alex Baxter, and he says, love the podcast, big fan. I'm attempting to bootstrap a startup in the job site space. So a job website, a two-sided marketplace. As I begin to look for companies to post jobs to the site, would you suggest allowing companies to post jobs for free to get the initial supply of jobs up for candidates to view, then worry about monthly fees later, or trying to charge from the get-go? I'm leaning towards free, but I wanted your thoughts. And the reason I like this question is because it's the classic two-sided marketplace. And whenever I talk to anyone about a two-sided marketplace, I say basically the same thing. You're going to have to figure out which side you need to get first. And in this case, you're not going to have any job seekers come to the site if it has no jobs. So you have to get the jobs up first. And so, yes, I would beg, borrow, and steal to get jobs on the site. Now, I've seen new job sites launch and they'll go and scrape Monster and Indeed and all, you know, Hot Jobs and all these other things in order to populate their jobs and start from there and then spin out. Now, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't do that, but it's a way to think about it. There are job postings out there that, you know, you would be able to populate on your site, and it's, you know, additional distribution for them. In terms of offering for free to employers, I probably would, because you have no traffic. So you really can't charge them because you have no job seekers yet. So in my opinion, it's probably hey, this is going to be free for the first 3 months or 6 months, or until, you know, we have 10,000 uniques a month, or until all of, you know, every job receives 50 views per month, or so there's something what it needs to just to trigger that they need to start paying you, because you don't want to get a bunch of your best employers and just be like, yep, the site is free to post, because that's not a business perpetually, right? You have to take an approach that long term you're not comping your best customers. And that's why it kills me. I've seen people pretty often do this with SaaS, where they get this launch list or they get 5 or 10 interested customers, and then they say, yeah, for your feedback, I'm just going to comp you lifetime. And I think to myself, no, these are your first 10 people. Like, you can give them a discount. You can comp them for 6 months. You can give them a discount for the first year. You can do that, because they are, you know, giving you effort, but you're also providing them a ton of value with this software. Like, if they're willing to sit and work through beta software with you, then they probably have a pain point that you're also helping with. So don't do that, would be my advice. Like, don't cut that revenue off at the knees, especially in the early days when you need it most. And for this, I would definitely consider just cold outbound outreach, because you probably know exactly where, I'm guessing this is probably a vertical, and you probably know all the companies in that vertical, and that would be cold emails, cold phone calls, to basically just be like, hey, can I, to start with, like, hey, I see jobs on your site. Can I repost these here? You know, do you give me permission? And technically, I gotta be honest, I don't know if you even need permission legally, whether that's an ethical thing. It's like, you're providing them with more distribution, right? You're republishing jobs, but do they have a copyright to the job posting? They may. So you may want to check with them first. You're going to have to, you know, talk to a lawyer or just do your research on that. But that's what I would do, is look at, if they already have jobs posted on their own site, I would look to just be like, hey, I will do this for free for, you know, the first 3 months since we're getting started up, and I will just, you know, pull all your jobs in. Are you cool with that? And try to make it as easy as possible. And I would either rent a scraper, an importer, hire a VA. I would do something that is able to pull in those jobs, so these folks are not having to do the work. And it's just a simple and easy yes. And then your results are going to make or break whether they want to pay you. And that's, I think that's kind of a cool, it's a cool and a stressful thing, you know, a stressful situation to be in. I think back to, I believe it was TripAdvisor in the early days. Their big game is building all these SEO pages, right? So they'll have a destination, and then they'll have all the rankings, and then they poof, they just get all the search engine traffic. And so they were trying to monetize, and they went to cut deals with travel ticketers, right? Airlines and hotels and all this stuff. And they basically said, buzz off, we don't care. So they, TripAdvisor already had a bunch of traffic, so they turned on the spigot to some of these, you know, ticketers. And I don't know if it was airlines or hotels, or it was just people selling tickets, but whatever it is, people selling the things that they were, you know, talking about on TripAdvisor, they turned on the spigot and just started sending them a bunch of traffic. They didn't charge for it, and they didn't get a kickback. They didn't get a commission, but then they turned it off after 2 to 4 weeks. And at that point, the people selling the tickets said, wait a minute, what'd you just do? And they said, yeah, we turned the traffic off. And they said, well, what do we need to do to get that turned back on? Well, and that's your conversation, right? That's where you start. And you say, well, we're going to charge you, or you need to give us a cut of, you know, of the ticket sales. And so that's what you're going to be, that situation you're going to be in here, is thinking about, you know, if you get these jobs for free for 3 months and no one applies through your site, they're not going to pay you. But if they get fantastic talent, it doesn't need to be a lot. You know, I've used a few job sites where I only got 3 or 4 applicants, but they were all top notch because it was just a really small niche. And I continued using them after that. So very good question. I appreciate that, Alex, and I hope it helps. Our next question comes from Robert Andrews, and he says, I'm a longtime tech journalist and editor turned content consultant. I've written a book. It's called Startup Blueprint, 7 Skills for Founders, Leaders, and Builders. It was a bit of an experiment in discovering those skills, distilling them, and frankly, trying to make my first product. I think it turned out great. I have some good reviews, but I'd love to get feedback, particularly on the marketing strategy. After spending so long writing the book, I did almost nothing to get it in people's hands. It's the proverbial tree which no one heard falling in the forest. My current approach is to offer a free sample chapter in return for an email, triggering an email sequence with weekly insights from the book, as well as links to purchase, which I think is a great idea. Built out the campaign in Drip, put the sign-up form on the site, but it has no traffic. And I thought of driving signups with Facebook and LinkedIn lead ads, but I'm not sure these can be cost-effective enough to market a product like a book. Any thoughts appreciated? So yeah, this is a good question. I mean, I think, as Robert alluded to, this is somewhat of a common thing. I mean, authors don't tend to think about the marketing side of it. If you were to do this quote-unquote right, then you would be doing pre-launch. You'd build a pre-launch list. I mean, if you, you know, listen to Zen Founder, you heard Sherry and I talking about our book for the past 6 months since she started writing it. You can even go so far, you know, when Brennan Dunn works on a project, he's like actively sharing pieces of it on Twitter, on his blog, to his email list, and just builds anticipation over time. That's what I did when I wrote, you know, my first book back in 2010. I was sharing pieces of it, getting feedback. And that's really the way to do it because it engages people. And then by the time you get there, it's a no-brainer for someone to buy it. Now, if you haven't done that, then yeah, you're just starting from a cold start. And especially in this space, there's so many people, you know, kind of with the startup message and the entrepreneurial message. So it is hard to stand out. I think Facebook and LinkedIn ads, I do not believe will work just because of the cost. I mean, typically you need a LTV of, let's say, 150 and up to work. But you know what? This is the learning experience. You've said it. I totally personally would run some Facebook and LinkedIn ads just to see what it feels like. You know, maybe your conversion rate on a book because it's so cheap will be way higher than the software that I've tried to sell using Facebook and LinkedIn ads. And there's a chance it will work. You know, you could find a small subset of people who, you know, are some audience that they'd be willing to buy it. And even if you only break even, part of this is just getting the reach out there, right? Because every customer who buys from you, now they're part of your audience and you have their email address. And I think that's a great way to do it. I think another way is, of course, I've talked about this a lot, is the podcast tour, you know, and if you have no name or no reach, then it is just going to be cold emails to podcasts. You're going to have to figure out what the story is because it's not, I just wrote a book, can I come and talk about it on your show? Because you're going to get zero yeses for that. So you have to figure out what the angle is for that particular show and why that show, you know, that show's audience would really want to hear about one of the concepts from your book. And if you have any type of network in the space, obviously that's where you want to start. And then, of course, public speaking, if you do any of that, you can often, if you get invited, you can often ask the organizers to buy a copy of your book for everybody at the conference. Both Sherry and I have done that, and it's worked out really well. It gets it in more people's hands. You give them a discount, of course, but then you get up there and, you know, people get to hear you, and then you have a video that gets on YouTube or Vimeo, and then, you know, you can promote that. I mean, there's all these angles, but I find, you know, selling a book a lot different than selling software because it's so much more about your credibility. It's about the person who wrote it. And it's about, I mean, it's also about the message as well, but it's much less about the utility than software is, right? Software has to solve a problem right away. People will churn out of it immediately, but a book can be an impulse purchase. And it's just about throwing a wide net and finding a lot of people who, you know, could potentially be interested. And like I said, it's an impulse purchase. I mean, I will often hear about a book and just as I'm hearing the podcast, jump into Audible and buy it because my Audible credits are so dang cheap. I'm on the annual plan and I buy a bazillion books a year. Very much an impulse purchase for a lot of people, especially if it's a $20 or $25 book. But the advice I would give is figure out how you're going to couch or position your book so that it's different than everything else. Because when I hear the title, which again is Startup Blueprint, 7 Skills for Founders, Leaders, and Builders, it sounds kind of like a lot of other books. Like it sounds somewhat generic. It's not super inspiring to me personally. I probably wouldn't buy it based on the title alone. So you're going to have to figure out how do I make this book, how do I figure out how to differentiate it from all the other books that are talking about the same topics. An example is my first book came out, I think it was 2010. It was called Start Small, Stay Small, A Developer's Guide to Launching a Startup. And I had a couple advantages. I had an audience of a bunch of developers who a lot were into products. I called it Start Small, Stay Small, which was kind of an interesting title for a startup book because no one ever talks about staying small. So it was like, oh, that's curious. And then I really niched it down, A Developer's Guide to Launching a Startup. And I actually got a bunch of people telling me, this isn't just for developers. Anyone can use this. And I said, I know, but I really wanted, if you were a developer, for it to just, not, you know, basically be a no-brainer purchase for you. And that's what happened. And the book, it has done very well. I'm trying to think of what the most recent numbers are. It's probably sold maybe 12,000 copies, you know, at between 20 and 35 a piece. Some of that's been on Amazon. But yeah, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars, literally, I've made from that book. And that was never the intent, but it definitely did very well. And I think part of that was because I had, you know, this small audience. I mean, this was before MicroConf. It was I believe before the podcast, or maybe right at the same time as the podcast was coming out. It was before a lot of this stuff. So I was really just a blogger and a guy who was making a full-time living off of these small products. And that was about it. And so it wasn't like I had, you know, the reach or the network or anything that I have today. And yet this book just kept selling. And I think it also helped. It was a good book. Like it was well-written. I put everything I had into it. I was super prescriptive and super detailed. And so it wasn't like it was just a pure marketing thing. There was also a virtuous cycle of word of mouth that helped to continue to spread and sell over the years. So good question, Robert. I appreciate it. I hope those thoughts are helpful. So I think that wraps this show. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail at 888-801-9690. You can also email an MP3 file or any type of audio file, really, to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Audio questions go to the top of the stack. I must always answer those first, but we do, of course, accept text questions as well via email. Theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.